harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and fighting that key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. This is the weekly program that Ken Givenan, William Johnson, and assorted guests and I record each week, and this is the Ethno State this week with
Hello everyone, this is William Johnson, Chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of the Ethno State. We have Ken Givenan, Bill Johnson, Rachel Pendergast, and Paul Fromm. And you know, the benefit about doing this show every week is I get to listen to all of the private goings-on of all of these people here. Because what's happening, what's good, and what's bad, except for Ken Givenan. He never tells anything about himself. I'm not sure what he's got going on in his backyard. But in any event, Paul, you were telling us about a movie that you saw recently, and I thought it was kind of interesting. So can you tell us all about that again, please?
Yeah, I see most of my movies on TV, but on Sunday I went to a local theater and saw Motherless Brooklyn. And I thought it was a period piece from the 1950s about small-time gangsters, almost like Goodfellas. But, well, it wasn't. It was about a small small-time detective agency, and the head of the agency had been murdered, and it turned out that he was investigating corruption between some really sleazy developers and some Jewish politicians and so on. And along the way, where he was trying to preserve, heavily formed an alliance with a Negress who was trying to go to bat for black tenants who were being booted out of their apartments to make way for development. Anyway, it was a fairly interesting plot, but in this period piece, they had to weave in a romance between the white detective and the Negress. I mean, the propaganda never ends, even though an interracial romance, even in the North, would have been very, very risky and unusual in the mid-1950s. Even the good movies are bad.
Yeah, but there seem to be doing that a lot. A lot of even the very old period pieces have something that just is out of place. Like if you look at these old knights, these new presentations of old knights in shiny armor movies, they always got a black guy running around there and leading the group, something like that. It's just crazy. They weren't back in there. And you read these stories about how they have pictures of all of these famous people in olden times, and a lot of them are black. They're portrayed as being black in Europe. It's just crazy.
Even 20 years ago, when my sons were little, I remember taking them to the theater for, I think it was either Robin Hood or something from that period. And there, one of the main characters in Robin Hood is Merry Band of Men. What was a big tall Negro? It's just utterly, it wasn't that way.
Well, imagine if they remember that movie.
Yeah, it's a long time ago too. Yeah.
Imagine if they did a movie about Shaka Zulu and some of the warriors were white people. Maybe throw in a few Chinese or make Shaka Zulu a white guy.
Right. However, if you do look at some of these old movies, you have Lana Turner playing, or Gene Tierney playing beautiful Asian women. So I don't know how they manage that, but I guess it goes both ways. But I do believe historically, like, wasn't the guy that wrote Count of Monte Cristo, wasn't he a black dude?
I believe he was like 1/8, like a very small. His name's on the tip of my tongue. I can't remember it.
Alexander Dumas.
Yes, I believe he was just a very small percentage.
But
I have seen pictures where over the years he increasingly becomes darker.
But also, and Paul, you may know this, isn't there like the most famous Russian poet or author, a black guy? It starts with a P. I can't remember his name.
Pushkin?
Pushkin. Isn't he black also?
I don't know. I never heard that.
That was Alexander Pushkin, and I did a little research on him recently because of a class that I'm taking, and they were talking about this, Russia's national favorite poet, and it turned out the research I found was his great-great-great-grandfather had been a servant of a Russian in part of Africa, I forget the name of it, but from what I can tell, part of Africa he was from, there were also white people that had lived there for centuries. And so they're just going off the assumption that everybody from Africa was black. I looked at a lot of the old pictures, his father, grandfathers, as far back as I could find, and detect anything. Not that you always can, but I think it's probably myth.
Well, also, I was reading about Boris Johnson's heritage. Boris Johnson, the guy that heads up Brexit, and he's about as blonde as you can get. And I think like his grandfather was like Pasha somebody from Turkey. You guys aware of that?
Yeah, he was part Turkish, and I think way back part Jewish, and he's a real a dog's breakfast of backgrounds, but he's an interesting guy.
You always come up with words that I have never heard before. I'm going to start using a dog's breakfast now in my speech from here on out. Okay, but in any event, Paul, that story that you relayed about Brooklyn, about the interracial married couple, really touched my heart. And there is a story today about a similar interaction, a love fest between a black woman and a man with a boy with, I think, Tourette's syndrome. Can you tell us about that story? It's on your list. It's the bottom one, I think. No, it's the, which one is it? Oh, it's teacher fired and charged after beating special needs student. That's the love story that I want to focus on right now. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it turns out that the student was a female student, and apparently you had a substitute teacher, white female, who was teaching the class, and the kids were not behaving properly. I don't know if you guys went to school, but when I was in school, when a substitute teacher came, they did not like. We made their life miserable, but that's what kids do. It's not right, but they do it. Well, this particular individual seems to have had a problem with impulse control, because she got mouthy with one of the students who was misbehaving. The student talked back, so the teacher leaned into her heavily, I think even pressed against her, and she tried to push her away, and the outcome was this black teacher just wailed on her, if I've got the story correct, and I think I do, from KUVUE.com. Video of a fight. Notice they don't call it an attack, they call it a fight, like nobody's at fault here. He emerged on social media on Friday and showed a teacher punching a student multiple times, no mention of race, pulling her from the desk and stomping on her head. Another video showed the student striking the teacher as she was grasping her in her seat. So that is the story. 10th grader, special needs, and turned into, according to the media.
Did you guys watch this video? I watched it for a second. It was vicious. This big old burly black teacher grabbed this little white gal and just pounded on her head, and then grabbed her and threw her on the ground and stomped on her head. It was just shocking if you guys saw this. Do you guys have any takeaways from that?
Well, again, it's just evident that so many within the black community do lack impulse control. And, I think that's why the old Southerners used to refer to them as a child race, because they had the characteristics of an immature adolescent, unable to control their rage and their anger. And this, to me, is just another example of a teacher, someone that's putting in a position of authority and is using that authority, but then also unable to control her anger and just taking it out on this poor girl.
Well, I think I was very successful as an instructor until Jewish pressure got me fired after a 25-year career, but I was very successful because supply taught long before I went to teacher's college. I supply taught all the way through university on March break.
What is supply talk? I don't know.
A substitute teacher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. So I was used to coming into sometimes difficult circumstances, not all, and Ken's quite right, the inclination of a class, especially as they get a little bit older, is to try to give the substitute teacher a hard time. So if the substitute teacher asks how things are done, the kids will usually tell them the wrong information. Or, does the teacher let you go to the bathroom whenever you want? Oh, yes. But, that's part of the course, and you can learn to deal with that. And I found a very valuable background. But I must say that the so-called special needs, a euphemism for backward, it can be really challenging. It'd be interesting to know if this Negress had any training in dealing with these people, because they're a different kettle of fish, or some of them. I mean, they come in different types, but they are completely different kettle of fish than say, an average class. I'm not expressing any sympathy for it, but it was, right. I'm just kind of curious, because it could be pretty challenging. But on the other hand, I mean, this stomping on her and body slamming her, I mean, this is out to lunch.
That's a little beyond the pale there.
Yeah. No, I'd
like to have heard that, but I never did.
I read the article, and my takeaway from this was that this special needs student was relieved to her father, who took her to the doctors, and the father said, well, this is just terrible what happened. You know, we have to really regroup and reassess our situation. It was clear to me that she came from a good, stable family where her father was there to take care of her special needs. And mm-hmm. I think, look at the other kids in that classroom, they were all Hispanic or Black. So I think her special needs is that she needed to have special training because she was so much smarter than everybody else in that class. So I think her special needs were she needed to have someone that could actually teach something more than Ebonics. So
and
I don't know.
And reading between the lines, I wonder if there wasn't real racial animosity on the part of the substitute teacher. In my day, in school, any use of restraint was always to be the bare minimum necessary to get a hold of the situation. It wasn't like a violent brawl where you want to obliterate the other guy. What this teacher did, I would have thought if Johns is out of control, she leaves the class, goes and gets the principal and says, hey, it's your problem. That would be the proper way to do it.
This substitute teacher was arrested, but nothing's going to come of it probably because it was black on white crime.
Yeah.
But one thing is, see, my experience growing up was kind of different than your guys's because I remember only really one time where we had a substitute teacher, I'm sorry, a supply teacher, was that he was trying to get his credentials. He was older, he was switching class, and he came in and he was trying to teach, and he told us that he was learning how to do this, and he had to get his hours, and our entire class was rooting for him. We were helping him so he could get his credentials. It was really working to his advantage. And so that was my experience. We had one other substitute teacher. It was in PE class. And our regular PE teacher also taught driver's ed. I think they all taught driver's ed back then because that's about all they could do. They could drive cars and they could teach throwing basketballs. But in any event, this specialty ed teacher that came in, he had been one of these professional football players for the Detroit Lions, and I didn't know the Detroit Lions has always been in the bottom of the pit, but he came in, he looked like a football player. He was big and buff and burly, and you know, he had blonde hair and blue eyes. He was really a tough, mean-looking dude, and you know, we all respected him. We didn't step out of line once, and this was PE class, and that maybe that's because of he was so burly. But I had good experiences vis-a-vis supply teachers and students.
Well, then I went to school with good Mormon kids who were well brought up. That was not always my experience when I was a substitute teacher. But you know, most experiences were actually pretty good. But there was a lot
of bad. I just graduated like 30 something years ago from high school, so that's somewhat a little recent. But I was, my school was all white. It was a small rural school. It's still 98% white where I live. And, if we had given any of our substitute teachers, and we had them quite often, any type of trouble, we would have been directly marched to the principal's office and paddled. And our schools, just within the last couple of years, stopped doing that in this area. A few schools actually do. But a few friends of mine that are substitute teachers in this area, they remember going to school when the substitute teacher was respected. Now there's too many kids taking advantage of the safe places. And even in this rural community, they have safe places where they can go and cuddle up with the pillow. And so they take advantage of the substitutes at that time.
Well, I was a special needs student. I always wanted caviar for lunch.
Okay. Well, Rachel, I do remember I have had my knuckles wrapped with a ruler. And so when I was growing up, corporal punishment was there were her. So, yeah. But so in any event,
I got to know, what did you do to deserve having your knuckles wrapped?
I remember I was in kindergarten, and the teacher was talking about who was the heir apparent to the British throne, and I knew and she didn't, so she probably didn't like how smart I was in kindergarten.
You had a special needs teacher.
That's right. But in any event, I do, before we leave this topic, I do want to point out that this article that we just talked about truly is an exact representation of the type of interracial romance that Paul was talking about. It, when you have black on white romance, it's going to end with being beaten in the head and stomped to the ground. So all of those that are considering it, think again. Okay, but in any event, you guys' comments that you gave on this particular story, I'm very impressed with. In fact, I'm going to give you a hand. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Paul, what's the story you have about that one?
Well, when I first bounced this story off a person who does research for me, she said, are you sure that's not an internet, you know, joke or farce? So I researched it, and it's not. It's from Oxford University of England, and the student union has voted to ban clapping at their commencement ceremonies and other events that they sponsor, and they've substituted for clapping, if you approve of something, Paul, I think the jazz hand, which is you put your hands up like this and you flutter them. Now, you might ask, or I ask, well, why? Well, anyway, apparently there are some people who are very sound sensitive, and some people who maybe have poor hearing, and they would get startled if there's applause. So in order to accommodate this infinitesimal minority of people, the clapping is out of it. Now it's the jazz hands. And the reason I thought the story was true is that I remember seeing a clip from the convention that took place in San Francisco, of course, in the summer, of the Democratic Socialist Party or whatever of America. And there was a huge kerfuffle there because somebody had misnamed somebody else, you know, they misgendered them. Somebody had wanted to be called they, and some poor socialists had mistakenly said he. So that was a big point of order, point of personal privilege. And during that, a few people applauded. Well, the chairman or chair thingy was bashing down with a gavel, saying we had agreed that there would be no applause. And you know, if you want to approve of something, you have to do the chant. I thought, this world has gone absolutely bonkers.
Okay. Give me in one succinct sentence an explanation of why clapping is bad and jazz hands is good. I didn't understand that.
Oh, well, clapping it upsets, or if the word is triggers, people who are very sound sensitive. In other words, it means you're better. You know, yeah, perhaps applause does, but it seems to me if you want to participate in an adult venue at a university, get over it. I see this as an example of minority-itis, where there's a certain trend among some of our people to so kowtow to various increasingly screwball minorities that we basically subvert the rights of the minority. Well, it happened. I mean, applause for clapping your hands has been traditional in for hundreds of years in our culture.
I can see someone being startled. I'm imagining standing in a room in deep contemplation and thought, and one of my grandchildren running up behind me and clapping. But I would never dare go to an assembly where you expect people to clap as a means of showing appreciation and support, and then somehow expecting people not to clap. You should keep your guard on for the next 2-3 hours, however long it's going to be, and expect clapping at any moment.
It's always predictable. Like at commencement ceremonies, quite often a number of names will be read, and these people will be given their diplomas, and then people are told to withhold their applause until, let's say, that class or that degree has been granted, and then at the end of that, people applaud. The moments of of applause are entirely predictable. It's not the same thing as, say, you're half fast asleep and one of your grandchildren sneaks into your room and starts clapping by your ear. And yeah, I'm sure that might start you, but this is the ultimate of snowflakery.
I always thought applause was kind of silly. I mean, why do people smack their hands together?
Well, actually, while you guys were talking, I wasn't listening to you. I was Googling history of applause. And it turns out that in ancient Rome, what they used to do is they used to wave their toga. They'd grab their toga and wave a little bit of it, and then move the napkins. They'd wave the napkins. Then someone decided we should start clapping. So maybe we should go back to wearing togas and waving them. That might appease these people.
Well, that's the jazz hands. It's pretty close to...
There you go. But clapping has moved from Rome all around the world, because other species. If you look at the zoo, you see this is how the monkeys clap. Now, they don't do it like this. They clap like that. And they picked that up. But one thing that shocked me most of all is when I was a teenager and I went to go live in the Orient, people would get up there and they'd make a comment or something, they'd give a little speech, and then when it turned time to clap, the guy up on stage that was giving the speech, he would clap. He'd clap for himself. And then I'll clap, and I thought, that's the weirdest thing where you're clapping. And so their clapping really can cause a lot of problems. So, yes, from here on out, let's wave togas.
Well, in the 19th century, quite often, when almost all men wore hats, in certain events, people would show their approval by furiously waving their top hats. But hats changed.
Yeah, maybe so.
Well, okay. How did the story go down in the Orient? Would people see it as ridiculous as the four of us see it?
Oh, I know. They do it all the time. Even when I go to functions now among Asians, East Asians, they will clap.
This story would be understood and they would find it as ridiculous as
well. Oh, yes. I mean, I think even if the chimpanzees understood, they'd find it as ridiculous.
Well, the takeaway that I see from this story is that we have our act together so well that these people have to make up stupid things. I mean, they just don't have any legitimate complaints. It's almost like a compliment that they do this.
Well,
by the way, if I could say something about what Paul just said, I'm actually old enough to remember when that men wore hats to church. And are you guys old enough to remember when women, it was a style, wore like these veiled net fish things on their faces?
Conservative churches, yes.
Yeah.
And everybody wore a dress to school. Well, not everybody, the girls, but
I remember that.
Wear the head coverings, but not the veils.
But no, I remember when they used to have hats, and whenever we'd have a prayer outside, before we said the prayer, all of you said, okay, please remove your hats, because it shows a respect to remove your hat when you pray. And that's the way I was taught. You're supposed to take your caps off when you're playing before a baseball game. You're supposed to take your cap off. So I thought, if I ever went to the Wailing Wall and I was supposed to be saying a prayer, my hat's coming off, and probably they'd probably do to me what that little substitute black lady did to that special needs kid. But
probably wail on you on the Wailing Wall.
Yeah, the Wailing Wall. But I was taught to show respect, you take your hat off. And so that's what
I think. They take their hair hat off. You know, it was, I remember distinctly back in the late 1950s, women had this style where they would wear dead animals around their necks. I mean, they had like fox fur. And, it was cool. Everybody was happy today.
I know.
That's it.
If you read some of these old, I like to read old comic books. Like I read Gasoline Alley from the 1920s, and you guys know what Gasoline Alley is. It's a comic strip that's been around for years. Okay, here's one that you'll know, Paul. The Archie comics, Archie and Betty and Veronica. Yeah, everyone knows that because Betty and Veronica are such good looking girls. Yeah, you read that just about. And Archie is such a doofus. He's a big old redhead guy, patterned after what Mickey Rooney and the Andy Hardy series. I read these old 1950 and 1940 articles or these comic strips, and it's amazing how times have changed. you go through eras where you have, you know, the black mammy is taking care of the little baby, and the chauffeur is just, you know, got the big old fat lips, and there's all sorts of racial stereotypes, and at the bottom of these new reprints they say, oh, for historical purposes we're reprinting everything exactly like it is. Well, 30 years from now, when they start reproducing some of this stuff we're living through today, you know, it's going to say, well, we're doing this for historical reason, but it sure is crazy. Okay, let's move on to another topic. Let's go to the really sad one. Sweden, 4 Africans charged with the rape of a 13-year-old girl. Tell us all about that, Ken.
Okay, this is from voiceofeurope.com. By the way, if you've not followed that site, it is extremely popular. They took off a couple of years ago. It really has a huge following. 4 military-aged migrant men from, is it Eritrea or Eritrea? How do you pronounce that? Eritrea,
Africa.
Africa have been charged with the brutal rape of a 13-year-old Swedish girl in a bathroom. The migrant men, ages between 20 and 25, are said to have taken turns raping the poor girl after forcing her inside a bathroom. One man in the group filmed the entire attack. How stupid is that? Now, this gets a little bit... well, it says the intercourse was preceded by violence. Graphic, yeah. Which considered of at least 2 of the defendants grabbing the plaintiff's neck and shoulder, thumping her head into a wall, and pushing her into a toilet. The defendants then proceeded to have vaginal intercourse with her, the indictment read. That's the story. The question is, why are we, you know, my question is, why are we allowing this to happen to our people? Or to anyone, for that matter.
Well, I think the answer to that question is the title that you wrote on your blog. Didn't you say race trumps rape or something like that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a hierarchy of social justice offenses, and at the very top is racism. So if there's a conflict between racism and rape or anything else, then rape is okay as long as, you know, that's preferred to being accused of racism. Okay, I'm sorry, Paul.
Sweden is a profoundly morally sick country, at least the elite. You'll notice that no feminist organization will be denouncing this violence against women, which would rightly do in any other circumstance. It would be if Lars or Olaf had or some pals had gang raped her, the some feminists would be all over that, and rightly so. But there is this this profound self-hatred on the part of a substantial number of people in Sweden. So these people who might normally support her, the feminists, are quiet. In fact, in many cases, the police will tell them not to make a fuss because it might lead to racism. In other words, it might lead to what Jared Taylor calls race realism. These people are dangerous. They're not the downtrodden of the earth. They are very stupid, very vicious. Aliens who've been allowed into Sweden. And I thought this was actually tied to another story a bit earlier this week some bombs had gone off in Malmo, which is a city in southern Sweden that's absolutely overrun by Middle Easterners, and there'd be widespread violence. And my understanding was the police had actually lost control of the situation. There are parts of Sweden that are in just desperate circumstances, and I find it interesting that Miss Morality, Greta Thunberg, is utterly silent on that. And if she really wants to do good in this world, how dare you? She should be back home in Sweden yelling at the Swedish establishment, how dare you bring these savage invaders to our country? And of course, she wants to save the world, take away our cars.
Well, it's just like Cortez, Ocasio-Cortez, had mentioned in Iowa over the weekend about saving the environment, and part of the way to do that was to combat white supremacy. And with these black rapists there in Sweden, somehow some of these real liberal feminist groups have decided that these rapists, these black rapists, are only rapists because of white male supremacy. That somehow if white supremacy and white colonialism, and if the Western world had not usurped or somehow undermined and other males of non-white heritage, that they would not be in the position where they feel the need to rape or to elevate their status in Europe or the United States. And it really is, like you said, Paul, it's really a sickening and depraved idea to somehow discount rape based on the color of the perpetrator, when any real woman who is in support of any type of rights for women ought to be the first one standing at the front line saying that horrid rapists like this, I believe, should be executed. And that used to be a long-standing concept among white civilization, that you did not rob women of their virtue in that manner, and that it was a crime against women, crime against the family, and crime against society. And now they just, you know, they might get a few years locked up, but they're not going to get the swift penalty and justice that they really deserve.
You got to keep in mind that when they lock up people in Sweden, these Africans, their lives are much better in prison than they would be back in Africa. So they're perfectly pleased. And
yeah, they just have sex with each other. So they're not losing anything.
Okay. I think you both made good points, but I believe that the concept of the reaction based upon whites hating themselves, or this reaction that we have is that whites feel that we have oppressed other peoples, and so if we had not oppressed them, we blame on ourselves. I believe that is the minority view among mainstream white people. I think that the majority view is what Ken wrote in the headlines. It's that the hierarchy of sins is that racism, we put that at the number one top. And so people are afraid to take a stand because they don't want to be considered racist. And I think also it's ingrained in them that racism is so bad that you cannot recognize other things. And so that's what I believe we have to counter. We have to combat and fight, is that that racism. Now, what the fight is that our belief that racism is so bad, we need to bring it down a notch or two. But this brings up a kind of an unrelated topic, but it kind of makes a point. I was reading recently how there are certain cultures in the Amazon rainforest that in order to make alcohol, they will chew on a yucca plant, and then they'll spit it into a community bowl, and then they'll let the saliva ferment, and that's how they get their alcohol, and they'd all get up and drink it. So everyone is spitting in a bowl and to make a drink out of it. And if we had done that in this country, you know, and we're bringing these people in from there, then I thought that is acceptable there, but is not acceptable here. And we need to realize that there are just different values and cultures. If they want to spit into a community bowl and drink that later on, and that's your culture, they can find, they can do it over there. But if they come here and they spit in a Budweiser bottle, well, actually they've been doing that, ice cream, and putting the lid back on, that's unacceptable. So if they want to live their lives in whatever it's called, and do that to their women, that's their country, but we have to wake up and stop it here in this country.
Apparently the Hmong, your country brought a fair number of them over after the Vietnam War, among their...
Minnesota.
Pardon?
They're all over Minnesota and Michigan.
Some of the best wine areas, and part of their culture is that, like, if you want a wife, you just go and basically tease a girl and take her off, and that's their culture. Well, you know, whatever. That's why some of us are advanced and some are primitive. that it shouldn't be brought here. But something that Rachel mentioned that I saw on the internet, this was the comment over the weekend by Alexandria Occasional Cortex. And she said, we have to fight for, we have to fight climate change. But to do that, we have to fight white supremacy. That was the headline. I thought, I couldn't even make any sense. So I actually read her comments. And having read the comment, that doesn't get sent. I mean, you know, we've been kind of pursuing the theme of things that are seen insane. And it absolutely wasn't insane. I mean, I've been trying very hard to see, well, what might the connection be between, you know, supposed climate change and white supremacy? And taking their narrative, which is of carbon, the generation of hydrocarbons is causing global warming, which mm-hmm. and it isn't, but just taking that narrative, well, the two biggest offenders are not whites or white supremacists, but China and India, mm-hmm. at last count, they were both non-white.
Yeah. Right, well, that's true, and maybe we'll wake up slowly. There is change coming on, and we are waking up incrementally. Okay, let's go to another article. Here it says, Jane Fonda jailed. What's that all about, Ken?
Well, speaking of climate change, apparently Jane Fonda is opposed to climate change, but she has this strange notion, as do a lot of leftist lunatics, that somehow humans are causing the climate to change. Mm-hmm. How the climate changed before there was free market enterprise, I have no idea, and excuse me just a second. My mic coughed. So she was participating or leading a protest, and she got arrested. Well, she's been arrested, I don't know how many millions of times, exaggeration, but lots of times, but this is the first time she's ever been taken to jail, and so they put her in jail. And the Hollywood Reporter asked her about her experiences, and her response was something to this. Well, you know, I'm a white movie star. So what she was saying is she received privileged treatment when she was in jail because she is white. And then the follow-up question was, how closely do you mingle with the general population? She said, I was in 20 hours, and for 7 hours I was in a cell. It was a holding pen. All of the cells had multiple people except mine. In my cell, it was just me and the cockroaches. So what I take out of that is, being a white movie star, you get to stay with cockroaches, which is preferred to stay with the non-white population. They say these horrific racist things, and they don't catch it. They don't realize what they're saying. Now, one more thought. Just maybe 2 weeks ago, I'm not a movie watcher, but I did watch the movie called The Book Club, which starred Jane Fonda and three other notable white women about the same age, and it occurred to me while I was watching the movie, there are no black people in this movie. In fact, they're all white people. And I thought that was so very strange for Jane Fonda and a movie that was made in 2018. Aren't these good leftists? And so when I was writing this article, I did a little bit of research, and I discovered there were 36 credited actors in that movie, all of which were white except for two individuals who had very minor roles. One of them was a guy named James Adam Tucker. He played the role of the county or of a court deputy, and someone named Ravi Kapoor, who is of Indian heritage, and I don't know what he played. But the hypocrisy of these people is just astounding.
Okay, well, there's so many things that I want to address, but I guess the most important thing that I want to address now is that when I was a kid, I saw posters for Barbarella, which is a 1968 film with Jane Fonda, and she was like in the future with a gun, and she had this spaceship with bikini on, and she was the most fetching looking gal I ever saw. So how can you not like Jane Fonda after seeing a poster of her in Barbarella? But she tried her best to get me to not like her with her subsequent political activism. But I always have in the back of my mind that spaceship bikini. And boy, it's hard to get out of your mind, particularly when you're just a young teenager. However, I remember when Jane Fonda was protesting against the Vietnam War, and I was just shaking my head, and I just couldn't believe it. And I was so mad at her, and in my teenage years, I just couldn't stand what she was doing. And then after the Vietnam War ended, and we brought in all these Hmong people, and we brought in all these Vietnamese people, we wanted to show that we're not racist, so we opened doors to all these Vietnamese people. And then years go on, and you know, Jane's saying that we can't, you know, we don't want to be fighting these people, and the right-wing view that we got to save the world from communism, we got to support democracy. I realized Jane Fonda was right. So first of all, you've got the bikini going for her, and first you've got, she was right in many respects about Vietnam War. So I kind of like her. So that being said, and then also when you got the fact that I also believe that climate change is influenced by humans. And even if it's not, it's good to cut back on all this carbon footprint, and it's good for all these wealthy people to take the subway instead of flying a plane where they're going. So if they would actually follow through on that instead of just speak out of their lips, then it would be a good thing. So those are three good things that I said that I like Jane Fonda for. So I'm ready for all the hate. Go ahead, you guys.
Well, I was just wondering if she flew a plane into the protest.
I remember
Jane Fonda from the 80s, from being like the queen of the aerobics workout videotape and everything.
I remember that.
Quite sure what has happened to this this broadcast. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Back with me again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time, and I sign off tonight as I always do with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. And Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever, the maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may the eyes of love be ours, which did the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.